Almost everyone I know has a story about a time they missed class. Not because they were sick or because they had a good reason, but because they simply didn't want to be there. When you're a teenager, you always have somewhere better to be. And whether or not you look back on these moments fondly, at the time you couldn't miss them. They were just that much more important than being in class. I'm Felix Garcia, and you're listening to Cap Magazine's The Sound. We're talking about truancy, times you cut class for one reason or another. Maybe you got in trouble, maybe your parents let you, but regardless of your motives, attending school was not a top priority that day. When I was a junior in high school in the fall of 1999, I skipped an entire day of class because I had a plan to see the new Kevin Smith movie, Dogma, for free. My friend Sean had a contact at the AMC Theater who could sneak us in during the matinee, so he proposed a plan to cut class the following morning. At the time, I remember turning down his offer to cut, but he kept making the deal sweeter and sweeter each time I said no. First, he offered the free movie. Then, he offered to get me a tank of gas. And finally, he promised to buy lunch. That was convincing enough to get both me and my cousin Steven, who was in the car with us, in on the plan. So there we were, parked in front of school at 7:45 Friday morning, waiting for Sean to get off the bus and hop in the car. It was pretty normal for us to hang out in the car before the first bell rang, so our classmates who passed didn't really notice anything out of the ordinary. Of course, I felt like we were pulling off a big heist and Sean was the safecracker who was our ticket to the big score. That score just so happened to be a Kevin Smith movie, a pretty substantial payoff for a 16-year-old in Fort Worth in 1989. While we waited, our good friend Jesse passed the car. I honked and waved him over, and I said something like, "We're cutting, come with us." And it didn't really take much to get Jesse to agree. I don't even remember if we told him the full plan. Whatever we were up to, Jesse wanted in. Finally, just before 8, Sean got off his bus, and I could tell by his brisk walk and the fact that he was still carrying his backpack that something was fishy. I gave him a honk and signal to hop in the back seat like a getaway driver with no sense of tact. "Let's go," I yelled. Sean looked at me, "Can't, gotta test," as he walked further and further away from the car. I panicked. I didn't even bring my backpack. Before Steven and Jesse could say anything, I hit the gas. I decided to carry on with the heist minus our safecracker. Needless to say, we didn't get into the movie. In fact, we didn't even try. Instead, we just kept driving. We drove from the north side of Fort Worth to the south, east to west. We even traversed the country roads on the outskirts of the city, which probably wasn't the smartest or safest thing for three Latino truants to do on any given morning. We couldn't believe how hard it was to find something to do. We didn't drink, we didn't do drugs, or even smoke cigarettes, so hunkering down somewhere and getting wasted was never really on the table. We visited Steven's old house, still empty after his family's recent move, and nothing notable was inside. On a dare, Steven walked into an adult video store just off the freeway and asked to use their bathroom. He was promptly kicked out. We were outside of our comfort zones, untethered to the itinerary set for us by the school district. When it was up to us to seize the day and make the most of our free time, we just wanted to go back to school. School was just safer. Nothing reaffirmed this more than the moment I almost smashed my car into a wall of gridlock traffic near downtown just before lunchtime. I still remember the sound of the tires skidding and the smell of the burnt rubber. It was a dangerous, unknown world away from campus during school hours. And with nowhere to go and nothing to do, the feeling was unanimous. We would have had a better time had we just gone to class. Everybody loves a good challenge, but what's it like when your school makes it way too easy to cut? Our next story comes from Liz, who went to a school just like that.
In high school, I had three really close girlfriends, and the four of us were known as the Pussy Posse. We believe, we're not 100% certain, but that name started because we didn't put out, and so a boy that we knew, Oliver, called us the Pussy Posse. It was something that we claimed as our own. We would write it and tag it on walls, in porta potties, in drain stations, on desks in school. And so the four of us would often, if we cut, we would cut together.
Liz attended Edward R. Murrow High School in Brooklyn, New York, where she grew up. Students were given periods called OPTAs, short for optional time activities, in lieu of a traditional lunch period or study hall. And students used this time to basically hang out anywhere on campus, which was fine so long as they remained on school grounds.
Even when it wasn't our OPTAs, it was very easy to pretend that it was. If a security guard asked for your program card, you could say that you had lost it, or you could fudge your program card, which was your class schedule, and make it seem like you had an OPTA when you didn't. My friends and I, we would often go to the courtyard and smoke cigarettes and try not to get caught by the security guards. Or we would hang out in the hallways and literally lie on the floor and take naps and listen to our CD players and talk. The one thing about my school was that if you left school property, you could not come back. So if we wanted to cut and leave, we had to leave and for the rest of the day. And sometimes we would do that and we would take whole mornings off or we would take whole afternoons off.
Liz's school was a secular public school in an Orthodox Jewish community. There's very little interaction between the community and the students, and when Liz and company made it off campus during school hours, they really had to dig around for a place to go where they wouldn't be busted.
So there was not a lot of stuff to do for a high school teenager. We would sometimes go to little nooks that we would find. There was one in particular that we called the Crack Cove, and we would go and hang out there. It was this shitty stairwell behind an old apartment building, and but it was a place we know that cops wouldn't find us. Other people wouldn't see us so that we were safe from getting in trouble if we were hanging out there.
Naturally, you couldn't miss a class without accounting for it the next day, so the school required a note from your parents explaining your absence. And since Liz's absences weren't exactly endorsed by her parents, she had to forge letters in their name explaining why she was out. But this would only make matters worse.
So once I gave them to my teachers, they would return them, and it would make most sense for me to have destroyed them by ripping them up or burning them or throwing them far, far away from my house. But what's most curious to me is that I would tend to keep them most of the time, and I would have them in my coat pockets, in my jean pockets, in my closets, in my drawers. And I, would just have tons of them just around my house, which led to my mom often finding them. Maybe she'd be doing the laundry, or she'd be going through my things, and she'd sometimes find stacks of them. And of course, this would lead to us getting into really big arguments about me cutting. Did I want to get caught? And was this some cry for help? Or another way to look at it is, was I boasting about something that I had just done and gotten away with, and I wanted to keep some kind of token to remind me of it? I don't know. I still don't know. I remember as a teenager that if my friends were hanging out on a Friday night or if they were cutting school together, I had to be there. It was so important that I not miss out on some shared memory or experience. And cutting was definitely a part of that. I didn't want to not cut if a bunch of my friends were. I felt like if I didn't go with them that day, that just I was going to miss out. And some, it was just a terrible feeling to not feel included. Now, when I look back on it, most of the times that I cut, I don't even remember what I did. I have some kind of vague, blurry images in my mind, but for the most part, I don't remember specifics. And it's funny to think that something that mattered so much to me at one point in my life, I can't even really remember anymore.
Liz Moskowitz is a photographer in Austin, Texas. You can see her work at lizmoskowitz.com. Some things are too good to be true, but if someone told 17-year-old me that I could get rich just by missing some class time, I'd be like, class? What class? The sound producer Nick Carpenter has the story of his brother Kevin, who had one such opportunity.
Hi, I'm Nick Carpenter, and I want you to meet my big brother, Kevin.
We bought fake drugs with real money, found fake money, and used fake money to buy real drugs.
Kevin and I started at the same Catholic high school in Albany, New York, but he moved on to a big public one in the suburbs as a junior. Growing up, we'd always been really close, but when he changed schools, that changed too. He started taking more chances and being a little braver, getting into trouble, hanging out with different people. Senior year, he got really good at skipping classes. How good?
Senior year of high school, I missed approximately 56 days of high school.
That good. Got it. Here's one of his favorite stories.
We went to Woodstock in August of 1999, of 17.
Quick note, this was the Woodstock with the fires and sexual assaults and small-scale riots. After this Woodstock, the promoters decided there wouldn't be any more Woodstocks. Okay.
And while we were there, we did a little rummaging around in the woods, and we found this plot of land that had a lot of marijuana growing on it. And it wasn't ready yet, so we waited it out until our research told us that would be the best time to get it would be late September. So in late September one day, we skipped school and we took my friend's mom's minivan. And when we got there, we had a little trouble finding exactly where it was because it was no longer, you know, had landmarks like billboards and signs and soda shops and things. It was now just an old Army base, Air Force base or whatever it was. After a little while, we found it and we went to this plot of land where this weed was growing. And we all had bags because we were going to harvest hundreds and hundreds of pounds each of weed and become weed kingpins. And there was no more weed. It was all gone and harvested and or destroyed. We don't know what happened. I assume harvested because of the next part of the story. We decided that since this plot had been harvested or taken away, that there must be another one close by somewhere. And so we rummaged around a little bit in the woods, and lo and behold, there wasn't any more, but there was a guy with a shotgun who didn't want us to be where we were and started screaming at us from probably 100 yards away and showing us the shotgun, you know, in the air, waving it around. And you'd think we would have just left immediately, but we didn't. I think we thought maybe that that was a good sign that we were on the right track. So we kind of were rummaging around a little bit more until he started shooting the shotgun. And as the story goes now, at no time were we in danger of being shot with the shotgun. I'm pretty sure he was shooting it in the air. But the story we told all our friends when we got back home, that bullets were literally flying by our ears. We could hear them and hear them hitting trees next to us as we ran away. It was very harrowing. We escaped barely with our lives. But in actuality, he was just probably shooting it into the air. But we were running and we were scared. And we hopped.
Every time I saw Kevin, which wasn't very often then, he would have a new story like this, even though while he told them, I would have to hide how scared his stories made me. Once he got robbed at gunpoint in Boston. More than once, he got arrested. Usually at this age, when you go on a trip, you were the parent and they're teaching you about preparation, planning, telling you everything dangerous you're supposed to avoid. My brother and his friends didn't have an adult to lean on, and they learned some pretty tough lessons on the fly. Kevin has changed a lot since then, but I had to know if it was worth it.
You know, I haven't thought about these things in a long time. Like I said, it's 1999. I thought I would regret it more. I really don't regret any of it, not one single adventure. At the time, doing some things that we got in trouble for, I regretted. Got arrested a couple times, I regret that at the time, but now I really don't. It hasn't negatively affected my life in any way. I feel like if I went to every single day of school, my life would have turned out the same way it has. So.
The sound was produced for Cap Magazine by Nick Carpenter and myself. Audio and music designed by Sound Noodle, who will provide cool music and audio for whatever you may need. SoundNoodle.com. You can hear the sound and see the sights, the writing, photography, and illustration of Cap at capthemagazine.com. Thank you for listening.